Jump right now to the Rood guest hotline. Rood, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. Our guy from Sharp Football, our pal Mr. Warren Sharp. Warren, what's up, buddy? Congratulations on the review of the 20, or the review, I'm sure, the release of the 2025 Football Almanac. Love it, dude.
Thank you so much for having me. Really happy to be done with it. It's a labor of love, but always great to have it in people's hands. And it's up on Amazon now as well if you want to buy the printed copy. But I've got a secret offer here for you, just your listeners. If you use the code GRANT, you can get it for $1 up at sharp.football. Go to sharp.football. You can get the PDF. It's regularly $30. It'll knock off $29 off that price to $1 for you guys.
I'm going to use that right now myself.
I will be using that as well.
I love that so much. So as we kind of get through that process, I think it's such an amazing thing. Your 2025 football previews, you said, available now. What the data that goes into putting this together with all the roster turnover, how do you do that? How do you sort of reconcile what a team was with what a team is coming up?
Well, the first thing I do is I strip away wins and losses from last year. I absolutely reject the notion of John Madden's you are what your record says you are. I look at why teams played the way they did last year, what went into it, were they playing with injuries, were they playing with bad coaching that's not going to be different, how did they accumulate these wins, were they winning a lot of one-score games, in your case you went 8-4 in one-score games, how are you accumulating these wins, and then I like to look at that roster turnover, as you mentioned, and the coaching staff turnover, what players were lost, were they any good, what players are gained, what do I think of those players, what do my draft expert think about the players that they drafted, and then just judge not just what I think a team is, but then it's a matter of, well, how good are they compared to the rest of the teams that are going to be on their schedule? Because that's really at the end of the day what's going to drive the wins and losses of 2025. It's not just whether a team is good or not, it's how good are they compared to the other teams on their schedule. So it's getting a good understanding of that schedule as well that the league gives out to teams in May. And then it's just a combination of all these factors. So it's a lot of work. It's months of work, but it's definitely put me in a real good position to have some strong thoughts on various different teams, either being good or bad this year.
What were some of your takeaways after taking a look back at Washington's season last year?
The biggest thing to me that I was blown away by, and I knew this in the moment, but I didn't know it to this degree, was that EPA that they gained on their fourth down plays. I mean, they did not go for it. Teams will remember, or fans will remember how great Washington was on fourth downs and instantly just think that Dan Quinn went for it more often. And we were great because Dan Quinn was just such a gambler on fourth down. No, they actually went for it less with Dan Quinn than they did in prior years with Ron Rivera, etc. The difference is that they converted 87% of their fourth downs, which was the best rate of any team in modern NFL history. And what was the most mind-boggling thing to me when I went back and watched every single one of those fourth down conversions using film study, they did not have a single quarterback sneak. And you and I know that this hack for fourth downs, especially fourth and ones, is using a quarterback sneak or a tush push nowadays, as the Philadelphia Eagles do all the time. And it's just crazy to me that they could have that much success without using a single tush push. The Commanders gained nearly 55 EPA on their fourth down plays. That ranked better than 23 NFL teams this past season for every single one of their offensive plays. Like, adding up all the EPA gained by every single offense for 23 teams, the Commanders just on fourth down exceeded that EPA. They had more EPA than even the Kansas City Chiefs, who obviously went to the Super Bowl. So it was the most efficient modern NFL team on fourth downs. And that was one of the things that clearly stood out to me the most, and is that unfortunately is going to scream regression to some extent this upcoming season. The question is, how far does that regress? I don't think it drops to the league average because of the creativity of the play calling and the quarterback in Jaden Daniels. I still think it should be above average results, but it's going to drop back. So then what does that mean that you guys are going to have to do in terms of avoiding those fourth down situations? You're going to have to be better on early downs. Otherwise, you're going to score fewer points in 2025 just because some of those drives where you were converting at an 87% rate, you're going to be giving the ball to your opponent.
Warren Sharp with us here on Grant and Danny, Toby in for GP. So we've been talking about this anecdotally, Warren, an awful lot, where you go, 12 wins was awesome. NFC title game was awesome. We had a great time. We haven't done that much around here for 30 years. But Hail Marys don't always happen. The kicker for the Giants doesn't always get hurt before the pregame, and Malik Nabers doesn't always drop a pass. A Saints play, I think it was Juwan Johnson, doesn't always drop a two-point conversion to get you a win. Sometimes those things regress, and those are just kind of anecdotal type things. You mentioned the fourth down percentage. What else might regress here or might look different year over year, even if the team hasn't gotten worse on paper?
Yeah, one area is, like, I don't know that the personnel defensively is going to be that much better. I think we could talk personnel on the offensive side of the ball, which is where I think some more impactful moves were made. But when I look at the defense, I am worried about the defense. Last year, you guys played the second easiest schedule of opposing offenses, second easiest schedule of opposing quarterbacks. And you still ranked 25th in defensive efficiency despite that. And when you run down the list of quarterbacks that you played, especially like from week 12 through 18, we're talking about games against, think about these quarterbacks, Cooper Rush, followed by Will Levis, followed by the tandem of Jake Haener and Spencer Rattler, followed by Kenny Pickett, followed by a rookie Michael Penix Jr., followed by Trey Lance. And that's not going to happen this year. You are not going to be able to play, like, what is that, six straight backups or rookie quarterbacks to close out the season. And which you guys won five in a row to obviously vault to the 12-5 record to close out the year. So that's not going to happen again. But I think your defense is going to, you know, you're playing a more difficult schedule and you ranked 25th last year. So all of this sounds pretty bad. The one way that you guys can offset that, though, which is something that's not really bankable, however, it could be coached and executed this year, is you could be better defensively from a takeaway perspective. You ranked 20th last year in takeaways. And if you look back to what Dan Quinn did, the way that he earned a job here in D.C. was with his defense in Dallas. And the thing about Dallas's defense is, on a down-to-down basis, it wasn't like a top-three defense. But where they excelled was at the takeaways. And the takeaways that they had on defense, some of which they would return for touchdowns, pick sixes, or fumble, scoop, and scores, they would allow their team to be plus 10, plus 11, plus 12 in turnover margin. And that goes a long way to winning games. That clears up a ton defensively. I will just throw a parallel to another team in the AFC, the Buffalo Bills. The Buffalo Bills, people look at the Bills and will say last year, well, they have a decent defense. No, their defense was terrible. The Buffalo Bills defense was not good. You can read the chapter on the Bills in the book. The difference was the Buffalo Bills were like plus 20 in turnover margin because of all the takeaways that their defense was able to secure. So if you guys are able to get some more takeaways this year, it absolutely can offset the fact that your defense might not be that much better. And then it can help propel you to winning close to the same number of games as you did last year, even with a worse defense.
Talking with Warren Sharp here on Grant and Danny, Toby Altizer sitting in for GP. You were really high on Jaden Daniels and going into this season, the impact that he can have. What stood out about his rookie season, and what are some places where you think he can improve going into year two?
Well, the execution, just the coolness under pressure. Obviously, we mentioned the fourth down conversion rate where he was passing lights out on fourth downs. It's a very small sample size. But just his ability to execute when it mattered and not to get flustered. And that really, to me, comes from the drilling that he does with that cognolized virtual reality training. I don't know why more quarterbacks around the NFL are not, and in college, are not using it. Mm-hmm. It's definitely well worth every buck that it costs for different quarterbacks to take advantage of it. But what I also liked about the way that he worked with Cliff Kingsbury, that was a little bit surprising in hindsight looking back, is just how great the Washington Commanders were at scoring points early in games and building quick leads, which is very important and is something that is something that I really harp on a ton. They led at halftime in 10 games last year. They led after the first quarter by an average of 42, by a total, if you add up all 17 games, they led by 42 points after the first quarter, which was the fourth best margin of any team in the NFL. Their 92 points that they led by at halftime was the fourth best margin of any team in the NFL. Their ability to perform early in games with good scripted plays and solid execution is going to be vital this year and is going to be you mentioned, like, what can he do to improve? This is something where if he maintains status quo, to me, that's an improvement. And I say that simply because defenses are going to make adjustments now. They've had all offseason to go back and look at what Cliff Kingsbury was doing with Jaden Daniels, with this Washington Commanders offense early in games, some of the scripting and the things that they like to do offensively. They need to maintain the ability to jump out in games. That obviously does help the defense. That will obviously, in terms of complementary football, put opposing offenses playing from behind the eight ball in terms of their second half performance. And then they will be more predictable with their passing rates and allow your defense to potentially get some more of those interceptions and turnovers. So it's going to be incumbent upon Jaden Daniels and Cliff Kingsbury to try to start games quickly in 2025, even though the opponents now have more tape study and film study on what you guys like to do. But I just, you know, we ranked Jaden Daniels as one of the top quarterbacks. You saw the rankings come out by the owners and GMs and scouts. I know you talked about on the show about how they ranked Jaden Daniels fifth best quarterback. Like, the world is really high on Jaden Daniels right now, and it feels like maybe it's setting him up for some disappointment this year because everybody is so high on him. But I'll tell you, a lot of quarterbacks do take a jump in year two, and I'm optimistic that he can be in that category of quarterbacks who get even better this year with just the dedication that he puts into the craft.
Warren, go back to last year, and then it's going to inform my question about this year upcoming, just kind of where you're at on this guy. So basically, it started mid-October when they played Baltimore. There's an abnormal game in there where they put an uncompetitive Carolina team, talking about Washington, beat the brakes off of them. Mm-hmm. Again, backup quarterback did that. And you and I could have done that probably against Carolina at that point. Then they struggled scoring-wise against the Bears, struggled offensively against the Giants, Steelers, and Eagles, and then the Cowboys. Some better defenses in there, but we're sitting here yelling about Cliff Kingsbury going, dude, you got to do something different. Terry's just on the left. Everyone kind of has it figured out. It seemed like he tweaked on the fly to avoid that cliff after a little bit. Kind of give me what you thought of Kingsbury last year, and then maybe moving forward this year is kind of the perfect pairing, or maybe not, with Daniels and this offense. Just where are you at on Cliff Kingsbury, play caller, offensive mind?
That's a great point that you made, because Cliff ran into that cliff for years when he was coaching the Arizona Cardinals.
Right.
And it was the question of, you know, our offense is figuring out Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury and what they're trying to do offensively. And some of the data, though, since Cliff, obviously he was not coaching in the NFL for a little while, and then he's back with the Commanders. Some of the data is actually showing that it was more of a Kyler Murray problem in terms of what Kyler Murray ends up doing later on in seasons with he's a diminutive quarterback who gets banged up a lot. Sometimes he plays later in the seasons injured. Sometimes he's playing healthy but just worn down, especially with how much he's running with the football himself and getting hit and taking hits. And just his ability to throw the ball down the field later on in the season. If you look at my Arizona Cardinals chapter, you'll see I write a lot about that. So it was very impressive to see Cliff not necessarily reinvent the offense, but just find other ways to open up some more creative aspects to it. I think in part there were limitations just from a personnel perspective with the offense, right? Beyond Terry McLaurin, wasn't a whole lot else there. You had Austin Eckler, who was contributing early, and they would catch teams with some surprise runs or mostly passes, but then Austin Eckler gets injured for a little while as well. And so your running back room is a little bit more limited from a personnel and a skill set aspect. I think it's going to be positive to bring in a guy like Deebo Samuel this upcoming season, because Deebo is a very atypical wide receiver. A lot of these wide receivers that are making the big time money, like Deebo was, are the guys that are getting open down the field, separating, you know, stretching the field, opening things up for offenses, being those possession type receivers. Deebo was utilized by Kyle Shanahan in a very different manner. So many passes are caught close to the line of scrimmage. Deebo is a yak machine, leading the NFL year after year after year in his yards after the catch. And that's exactly, ironically enough, what Cliff Kingsbury will be able to get after this guy. It's not the vertical offense, it's more that horizontal air raid offense that Cliff will be able to deploy, giving defenses something to think about pre-snap, using some more pre-snap motion, hopefully, and working Deebo Samuel around, that will then help Terry McLaurin just with Deebo out on the field and providing that other receiving threat. I don't think teams last year really cared that much about the other receivers in Washington. They could focus a little bit more on Terry. And then, like you said, always on one side of the field, defenses were able to slow down the passing attack with a rookie quarterback and his number one weapon in Terry McLaurin. Now it's going to be a lot more difficult for them to do that, because I think of the ways that they'll be able to get Deebo Samuel involved as a receiver, doing some things after the catch, using in pre-snap motion to help influence coverages. I'm looking forward to that creativity. But I will say this, Cliff will have to continue to stay creative all year long. The very best offenses are those that are really doing rigorous self-scouting every single game. After the one game, looking back at the last game, the prior four games, and the full season, and trying to make improvements. What can we do better? What can we do differently? What's actually working that maybe we didn't realize was working as well as it was? What are we doing too much of? All of those types of things, they should be their analytics department looking at that on a week-to-week basis and trying to continue to bring more creativity, because this schedule is going to be brutal. The schedule is not going to be easy, especially down the stretch, and you're going to be playing a lot of offenses that I think will be successful and can put up points, and so you guys are going to have to match them.
Warren, on a full scale of the NFL real quick, who's the team that you looked at and you think is going to surprise either good or bad this year?
Well, this team is supposed to do well, but not very many people are talking about them. And that, to me, is the LA Rams. I think the LA Rams, when I went back and looked and just fully understood, okay, this is a team, their number one wide receiver last year was Puka Nacua. He goes out week one, and he doesn't return until week eight. Their number two receiver was an aging receiver, but he's still their number two, Cooper Kupp. He goes out week two. He doesn't return until week eight. So your top two receivers, think about it, like Terry McLaurin and your number two, are out basically the first half of the season. And then they also sat them week 18, the last week of the season. They didn't play any of those receivers. And yet the LA Rams last year still won 10 games. Like, they still won 10 games without their top two receivers playing like half the year. So I think that's a team, and Matthew Stafford was terrible on third downs. It was terrible inside of the red zone. I think that's a team that can impress. Now, they were the ones who gave the Philadelphia Eagles the most challenge last year in the postseason. So it's not really going out on a limb and saying, I think this team's going to be much better than anybody thinks, but nobody's really talking about them. And I think they're going to be a really, really competitive and solid team this year. A team that, unfortunately, I think is going to step back, in my opinion, could be the Cincinnati Bengals, which is a team that, like, they've got a stud quarterback, one of the best in the NFL, obviously ranked higher than Jaden was, top five by most owners and GMs. But the issue is, what is there around him if he's not throwing the ball perfectly to his elite wide receivers? They don't have a great run game. They don't have a great offensive line. They don't have a great defense. I mean, those are three important aspects to football. Running the ball is not quite as important as the other two, but that's a team that really is solely built around Joe Burrow. And if he's taking as many hits as he's been taking the last couple of years, it's inevitable that he'll eventually get dinged up, have some issues from a health perspective. And I just worry, what is this team record-wise? I mean, he's been brilliant for a couple of years, and they've only won 9 games each of those seasons. Like, at some point, and their win total this year is 9.5. Like, at some point, Burrow's either going to get injured or his play might fall off a tiny bit. I don't see the defense stepping up. I don't see the run game really stepping up this year. So I have concerns about them. So those are a couple of teams around the league who are playoff competitors, one of which I think will be better than people think, and one of which I think will be worse than people think.
SharpFootballAnalysis.com. Use that promo code GRANT for $29 or what is it, $28 off, $29 off, $1 for the 2025 football preview. Warren's behemoth telling you what's going to go down this coming season. A pleasure as always, Warren. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks for having me, guys.